The good, the bad, and the alternative. By Madame Melon Meow and Sarcastic Celery. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. Chapter 15. I am still alive. Jade.
I was so worried I wouldn't be able to find you!
Though tears poured from Jade's face, she was laughing and smiling. She'd pulled back from burying her face in the woman's lab coat when she felt them welling up, and now looked up at her mentor as she clung to her. Dr. Lalonde gazed down at her with an expression of joy, tears of her own glistening on her lashes. Her hand still gently brushed the back of her head, a comforting gesture that Jade had not experienced in years. Elsewhere in her room, others were speaking, in various tones of shock and surprise. Some of the voices were familiar, but Jade didn't care. At that moment, she didn't care about the lies and half-truths, the fear and uncertainty. There would be time to demand her answers later. For now, the most important thing was that she had found the only living person in the world who had taken care of her. She didn't have to be alone.
Jade, you look almost exactly the same. Aside from this new scar, you haven't aged a day.
Her teacher's hand had stopped stroking her hair, and both hands came to cradle Jade's face for a moment as the woman examined her thoroughly. Jade let go of the doctor with one hand, reaching up to wipe her eyes.
I only just found out how long I was missing. I got hurt when the plane was hit, and Beck must have taken me to Ferry to rest and heal.
Ferry?
She repeated Jade's words with a sense of wonder.
All this time, you were just on the other side of the veil. I had no idea Beck was capable of such things.
Dr. Lalonde looked down where Beck was sitting at their feet, panting and wagging his tail. He made eye contact with her and nodded his head, signifying his understanding. The gesture made Jade gasp as she remembered the revelation the Megiddo captor couple had shared with her.
I'm in a ghost and a demon, and they told me Beck is the god of bonds. He's the lord of hounds. That's how he was able to take us to Ferry, and when I woke up, Beck was talking to a direwolf, and she brought us to your lab in New York. She was a wizard, too. It wasn't dog magic, it was pink.
Jade was babbling just a bit, but she couldn't help it. She wanted her teacher to know everything. The hands left Jade's face as Dr. Lalonde instead raised them, making a gesture to pause.
Whoa there, slow your roll, he's a duumvirate.
There was a touch of panic in her eyes, hastily hidden by the gleam of scientific curiosity. But her hands were beginning to tremble. Jade knew what that meant.
I guess so. Grandpa never told me, but I think he knew.
Jade couldn't help the touch of bitterness creeping up, nor the sarcastic lilt to Graham Harley's title.
But anyways, we ended up in New York. I looked for you, but the lab was pretty empty. I even went outside.
She watched her teacher's face as she continued gauging her reactions.
I was surprised to find I recognized the rubble of your house, that it matched my online friend Tentacle Therapist's home to a T. And then I found this.
Jade let go of Dr. Lalonde entirely, pulling from her pocket the framed photograph she'd placed there this morning, and presenting the damning evidence of Rose and her mother posing together.
Did you know that my friend was your daughter? Why didn't you ever say anything? You never even told me your name, but I told you about my friends. You knew TT's name was Rose.
The joy of reunion was being pushed aside, frustration filling her. The dead weren't the only liars in her life. She didn't think she could ignore it.
Oh, sweetie, I'm so sorry.
Dr. Lalonde gave a watery smile as she took the photo from Jade's loose grasp.
I never told Rose about you to protect you from your grandpa's enemies. If I told you my kiddo was your friend, you'd have been forced to lie to her about me every time she complained I was too distant. When you'd know I was busy working with you, it was to protect you. Protect both of you.
She trailed off, her focus going distant. She was trembling even more now, full body shivering, really. Jade couldn't bear to interrogate her in this state. She'd been doing powerful magic when Jade had run in, and the effects were showing. Her voice soft, she spoke.
I know you were doing your best We can talk more about it later. Why don't you sit down and have something to drink? Relax a little bit?
Shame and relief warred in her teacher's eyes at Jade's words, and she nodded jerkily, stepping back.
You should take a look around. There's someone here who's been really missing you. Several someones, actually.
She gestured around the room with her hand, lunged forward to pull Jade into another brief embrace, one which was overwhelming in its intensity, before pulling away entirely. Moving to a cabinet full of reagents and shoving them around until a bottle of gin and a can of tonic water was revealed, Jade forced herself to look away from her teacher's self-medication, instead actually looking around the room. Within the circle was an observation table, on which was laid a beautiful, if oddly green-tinged, Middle Eastern girl whose hands and bare feet glimmered with gold. Another girl, gaunt and frail, stood over the table, arguing across it with a heavily tanned and scarred adult man, another hunter from the looks of it, while Karkat watched. Jade didn't know what to make of it. Suddenly Jade felt a great force slam into her from the side, a pair of hands wrapping around her shoulders, turning her to face the figure in a shock of warmth. Two boys stood in front of her, two boys she immediately recognized. The one who'd grabbed her broke out into a toothy grin. His bright blue eyes gleamed at Jade like the heart of a flame. She felt that power inside her leap at his touch, the same way it had with Beck. He didn't seem to notice, or if he did, he didn't understand it. The other fidgeted slightly, his smile just as wide, his eyes hidden by shades, but his joy apparent. Jade felt her own face responding in kind. Her friends were here.
Chung? Dave?
She gasped, reaching for them. Both boys embraced her, the three friends laughing as they hugged. She felt Beck nosing into the embrace as well, his eager barks, wagging tail, and joyful licking of anyone he could reach, a reflection of her own happiness.
Holy shit, Jade, you're here! I can't believe it!
John spoke first, his eyes bright and warm as he stared at her, as if worried she'd disappear when he blinked.
I can't believe you're here either,
Jade responded in kind.
I thought I'd only find Dave here and probably Rose. Wait, where's Rose?
She looked around, expecting Rose to appear behind her. Dave cleared his throat as she did so, and she looked back at him.
You have no idea how ironic all this is, goddamn. It's like the Christmas story with the watch chain and the hair cone. Shit's full of dramatic irony. Dastardly revelations after the fact makes me want to ask Chekhov to put his stupid gun away before someone gets shot.
He was nervously rambling, tension evident even as he embraced her.
Which is to say, damn, girl. You knew we were here? We've been looking for you for 3 years, and Rose has been looking for the hardest.
His voice broke off, his tone suddenly bleak. John shifted uncomfortably at Dave's words.
So hard, in fact, that she can't come over and hug you. You'll have to go to her.
He jerked his chin like a cool guy, nodding in the direction he wanted her to look. Jade did so, turning towards the door she'd burst through to the line of chairs beside it. Sitting in a chair, staring in open-mouthed shock, was Rose. Jade grabbed her friend's hands, tugging the boys across the room with her, eagerly approaching where Rose sat. As she drew closer, Jade understood what Dave meant. A handcuff trailed from Rose's wrist to the arm of the chair, keeping her from rising. This would not do. Jade let go of the boy's hands as she reached the chair, reaching out for the cuffed wrist.
Separatus Kerpo!
She hastily spoke the words to magically pick the lock as her fingers grazed it. The words to this one, fittingly, she'd decided on after some of Rose's derisive effusions regarding wizards. Jade ignored her surprise as the handcuff fell apart, the bracelet disassembling and each link of the chain disconnecting in a clatter of metal. Instead, she grabbed Rose, lifting her as she had her mother, freeing the girl from the chair and the gently hissing heat of the cuff's remains. As she lifted Rose up, the chair itself fell apart too, as though the maker had forgotten to use anything to bind the pieces together.
Rose! I found you! I found you all!
Jade laughed, twirling around and placing Rose down between John and Dave. Gleefully, she enveloped all three of her friends in her arms. Everyone was here. And Jade was going to savor it, was going to savor human touch, savor love. Even as tears prickled her eyes, even as the sensation of three warm bodies was overwhelming, she clung tighter. Before the plane, she had never expected to leave her island. After the plane, she hadn't known what to expect. finding not just her teacher, but all of her closest friends. She was so very happy. Yes, you found us. All this time we were searching, and you found us. We hoped you would. But seeing you now, it's like a dream. Rose's voice sounded hollow, making Jade wonder at what her friends weren't saying. Why had Rose been handcuffed? Why were they all in the lab? What did that have to do with the hunter or the girl on the bed? Before she could voice any of these questions, she heard a sound that made her heart drop. Beck, soft but not inaudible, was growling. She looked down at her dog to find his hackles raised. He hadn't given Rose the same treatment he'd shown the boys. Instead, he stared at a lump in the girl's pocket. She had not seemed to notice the godly dog's displeasure. Instead, Rose stared hungrily at Jade. There was no concern she would disappear, unlike John. Her friend's eyes were searching for something in Jade, as though she held all the answers. As though Jade was not full of an ever-growing list of questions, as though Jade had the power to save her from what? Jade wasn't sure. Something in Rose's eyes flicked then. In that moment, something pushed away, and the smallest smile tugged at her lips.
You found us?
Rose's voice came out high, warbling on tearfulness. The tall girl looped her arms around Jade's back and squeezed, a tremulous laugh pouring from her. Jade felt like she'd been entangled in a jellyfish, the way Rose's long limbs reached all the way across her back and wrapped around to the front. Beck had ceased his caution, now just watching on quietly, his tail slowly wagging.
Jade. Oh my God, Jade!
Rose sniffed, pulling back and glancing to her sides, where John looked like he was fighting off sympathy tears. And Dave looked just a little bit awkward. Rose stammered between hiccupy breaths.
Where have you been? Dave asked for her. When have you been? No offense, Jade, you don't look 19. Were you fucking catfishing us? Reverse Chris Hansening us and shit? You know, there's a lot I wouldn't have said if I knew you weren't too old for me. Dave, don't.
Rose's voice cracked and she cleared her throat.
Don't make this about your painfully flagrant Oedipus complex. A guy can't help you never met his parents, Dave said. Your parents shaming me, Rose? Shaming a guy with 100% less parents than you? Real classy.
Jade giggled. Some part of her had been worried that her friends would be different in real life, less themselves, but no. Here Rose was psychoanalyzing, Dave cracking jokes, and John laughing along with his goofy, lovable smile.
No, really, Jade, John spoke up. What happened? It's been 3 whole years, and a month about, but you get what I mean.
Well, Jade began.
The long and short of it is, I got a concussion on a crashing plane, and then Beck,
she rubbed his head,
saved me by taking me into a portal to Ferry.
Ferry? John asked. Jade nodded.
You know stories like Peter Pan and people getting trapped by the Fae in Eternal Summerlands where time flows differently?
The first one, sure, Dave said, gesturing for her to go on.
Basically that. Instead of 3 years, it couldn't have been more than a day for me.
Jade trailed off towards the end of her sentence. Looking at all of her friends, the kids she'd nearly considered younger siblings for the duration of their online friendship, they all looked so much more mature. Dave's boyish looks were sharpening into a firm jawline and sharp cheekbones. Rose was... well, she was always tall. Jade could tell from the Skype calls, but now she was enormous, and the quick wit behind her eyes looked like it had only hastened. And as for John...
Is that a mustache?
Jade said, her outrage only partially insincere. John balked.
Shoot, did I forget to shave? There's kind of been a lot going on recently.
He delicately prodded at his upper lip, feeling the scattering of sharp black hairs. It could hardly be called a mustache, but it only cemented how much time Jade had lost.
Damn, are we all the same age now?
Dave asked into the air.
It seems so.
Rose spoke quietly, like she was parsing the implications of Jade's time loss as much as Jade was.
"Do you feel untethered? Listless?"
Rose began prodding.
"I'm not a changeling!"
Jade stamped a foot on the hard metal floor, but she was pressing her lips against a smile.
"Go on, ask me something only I would know."
"What does Rose talk about when you two aren't private calls?" Dave attempted.
"How much she yearns for a guy that never takes his sunglasses off to sweep her off her feet like a fairy tale prince,"
Jade said in false bubbliness. Dave clicked his tongue, always knew it. Rose elbowed him in the stomach.
"How about... where did I go to primary school?" Rose asked.
That was a deep dig even for the real Jade, which was her, obviously.
"You went to a normal public school,"
Jade began. Rose angled her gaze suspiciously.
"And then you told your mom there wasn't enough pathos and demanded he be sent to a uniform-enforced Christian boarding school for middle school."
Rose gave her a dark smile. Those nuns didn't know what hit them. "That's quite sufficient for me." Dave and Rose both looked at John. He picked at a fingernail.
"I guess I wouldn't know if it was the truth or not, but what did you send me for my 13th birthday?" he asked, sounding guilty. "I mean, it never got to me because of all the meteors and stuff, but I always kind of wondered."
He scratched the back of his head, looking off at various other things in the lab. Jade placed her hands on John's shoulders, forcing him to look her in the eyes. His gaze locked with hers, and he swallowed.
"John, I got you the real bunny prop from Con Air. I'm so sorry it couldn't make it,"
Jade said, grief in her voice. John opened his mouth to speak, then cocked his head, looking more baffled than concerned or disappointed.
"That's disproportionately unlikely,"
Rose said, glancing at Dave, who rolled his head back and groaned. "Not this shit again."
"Dave and I believe we established that I had the more verifiable claim to finding the correct bunny,"
Rose said, resting her hand on her chest.
"We did not fucking establish that. I found the real one from a shady Mexican janitor who swiped it out of the garbage after filming because it was so beat to shit it's not like they were going to keep it around,"
Dave shrugged.
"But go on and tell her about your special piece of paper that makes it okay to trust people in Hollywood."
"I will."
Rose turned to Jade.
"I got it from an auction with a certificate of authenticity from the Touchstone Pictures prop department."
She was clearly trying to overpower Dave's bravado with rationality. Jade slid her hands off John's shoulders, feeling a static shock, probably from the metal floor, prick her fingers as she pulled away.
"That can't be right. I was in talks with a collector over email that said authenticity papers were made up to sell replicas at auctions, and they had the bunny and could list all the previous owners too,"
Jade said, cocking her head. Rose's thin eyebrows shot up.
"Is that a challenge to the veracity of my claim?"
"Our claims,"
Dave butted in.
"Guys, come on."
John slid between everyone.
"I really, really appreciate everyone thinking of me like that, but it doesn't matter. We can never know now."
The tiny confrontation slouched with John's efforts at defusal.
"I guess it just means we all owe him a gift,"
Jade said, beaming at the group.
"No Con Air merch this time, though." Dave waved a hand in dismissal. "All that prop shit's in the thousands now."
Rose tapped her foot.
"I suppose, only because there's no way to tell." "Why are we talking about me?"
John threw up his hands.
"Jade, you were gone forever, and you just popped back up in Houston at the same time all this other crazy stuff happens. What's the deal?"
He glanced back at Dr. Lalonde, who was carefully stirring a fizzy drink.
"And how do you know Rose's mom?"
he said, lowering his voice. "Real," Dave added.
"Did you already know about all these mystical monsters and shit?"
"I'm quite curious about that myself,"
Rose admitted. That oddly hungry glimmer in her eyes poked out once again. "You did just cast a spell that disassembled my restraints in addition to my chair." Jade's smile wavered.
"That's a lot of questions all at once," she said, laughing awkwardly as she looked away from her friends. "And I'd really like to answer them all, but I feel like I interrupted something." "Oh, yes. Of course."
Rose's tone took a nosedive into depression.
"Yeah, pretty rude, you're not gonna lie," Dave snorted. "We were gonna figure out if John was Spider-Man or not."
John's eyes lit up.
"What if it's a Ghost Rider thing? There was fire involved at one point, right?"
"It's not a Ghost Rider thing, man," Dave dismissed.
"Look into my eyes. Do you see the blood of the innocent?"
John stared hard at Dave, his eyes wide. He started walking towards Dave, reaching for his sunglasses.
"Dog, quit it."
Dave started squirming away from John, swatting away his hands. Rose and Jade shared a look,
I don't have any clue what's going on here, Jade said. She was glad the spotlight was off her, but...
It seems we all have some questions to answer, Rose admitted. Now might be the least auspicious moment you could have arrived.
She was looking, expression tense, over at the two cool-toned girls at the medical table. Jade felt a seed of worry that she'd been holding and almost done away with start growing again. That her friends wouldn't like her in person. She began fiddling with the pink reminder on her index finger. Rose glanced back at Jade in the corner of her eye and seemed to take notice.
Jade, please do not mistake my words.
Rose leaned over and hesitantly reached for her hands. Jade grabbed at it like a lifeline. Rose's hand was rougher than she'd expected, long and bony.
You're being here, being alive, being with us.
She directed the final word towards John and Dave, who turned around. Dave's sunglasses half off his face. John smiled at Jade. Dave readjusted his glasses, smoothed his hair, and threw her a sideways peace sign.
It's nothing short of a miracle. It's hard to process, frankly.
Yet Rose has been going insane looking for any sign of you.
John pulled Dave over.
It makes me feel kind of guilty for not really looking for you, but I just had a feeling you'd find us eventually.
Jade cocked her head, looking at John's face as he said that. Something about the guilt on his expression made her think of her grandpa. The way he would tuck his head between his shoulders after putting Jade through drills that were just a little too hard.
I can't blame you for being right, Jade said, smiling sadly. It would have been impossible to find me in another realm. I'm sure any tracking spell would have given the same feedback as it would if I were dead.
Makes that two resurrections in one day, then shit. Eat your heart out, Jeezy boy.
Dave rubbed his nose with the back of his hand, disguising a glance back at that girl on the table. Two of Jade's thoughts clicked into place. Free from the questions of her friends for now, she was starting to assemble a picture of why everyone was in this lab in the first place.
Wait a second, Rose, is that Kanaya?
Jade's mouth hung open, looking back and forth between the other cluster of people in the lab and her friends.
And why haven't you introduced me, and why does she look so green?
Dave blew air out of the side of his mouth and turned away, walking towards the exit. John suddenly became very interested in looking for his glasses cloth. Rose swallowed.
Well, that's what we...
She looked at the boys, who were in various stages of bailing on her. She sighed.
Aye.
Not to explain. Carcat. Carcat had barely laid Kanaya down on the table, shocked by how her body temperature matched his own, terrified by what he'd seen, when the hunter had appeared in front of him. Hovering over the unconscious girl, barely hiding his panic, he seemed not to notice Carcat standing across the table from him. Vriska, who'd followed Carcat to the table and hovered over Kanaya beside him, didn't seem to care about hiding her emotions. It was strange seeing her emoting so openly, the concern and fear evident as she took in Kanaya's still form. Vriska, of course, tried an active approach to dealing with these feelings, namely by shaking Kanaya's shoulder. There was no response from the other. With that, she looked up at Carcat, meeting his gaze.
Carcat, thank fuck you're here. I need help. That horrible wizard did some sort of spell and it injured Kanaya, probably trying to cover up for her daughter who's gone full witch.
She spoke the term for chaos magic users with venom.
Rose killed Kanaya yesterday morning. The humans were going to bury her. They didn't expect Kanaya to come back when the sun set last night, and now they don't listen to her. When she keeps saying she's hungry, they don't believe me when I say she needs blood, and that the danger they're so worried about is their own fault, letting her starve.
She directed those words at the hunter, who seemed more focused on the nasty, sparkling welts on Kanaya's extremities than the words Vriska spoke. Carcat's breath caught in his throat. Feferi's fear that her mother's reaction would be deadly seemed to have come true. He gazed down at his friend and how unnaturally still she was. His hand reached for her wrist, fumbling for a pulse. Again, her skin was cool to the touch. He tried to be gentle as he felt for proof that he wasn't fondling the wrist of a corpse. Her flesh was unyielding even as he pressed harder, more intensely searching. He could see where the vein should be, but her body was unresponsive.
Fuck. Carcat, look here.
Vriska delicately pressed her finger to Kanaya's top lip, pushing it out of her way and showing off the serrated fangs jutting out. She's not really dead, I promise. But if they don't let me give her blood, she might not wake up again. Vriska spoke somberly, even in the face of absurdity.
What the fuck?
He demanded, looking across the table at the hunter. The man still seemed unable to process what was happening around him. Karkak cleared his throat, putting on his elder voice. He couldn't speak as a panicked teenager. This wasn't like the day they'd found Vriska. The elders hadn't organized a citywide grid search for Vriska, hadn't rallied their communities in a display of unity for anyone other than the grub daughter.
Hunter, he said, with as much authority as he could muster.
The hunter's shades flashed in the fluorescent lab light as he finally looked up, meeting Karkat's gaze.
Elder, he responded in kind. I should guess you're here on behalf of Ginny.
Mama?
Not just her. I have the full weight of the Elder's Council behind me. I'm here for a status report of this situation. You cannot brush me aside as a bridge boy this time. I let you do so when the situation called for your authority in order to perform field surgery and provide protection for Vriska.
He paused long enough for the hunter to nod his head in acknowledgement, then continued, trying to pour strength and confidence into his tone.
Now the human elder's daughter went missing. The city has been mobilized, and the roof of your apartment building looks like a sloppily covered-up crime scene. I have speculation, but I need answers. Proper ones. What the hell happened?
The hunter sighed.
So you saw the roof?
Yeah. I was rushing. He spoke it with the confidence that, had he sufficient time, there would have been no evidence.
The kids did a ritual. Found some dark artifact they thought would let them talk to their missing friend. Instead, Rose summoned something. Kanai was torn apart by it. Then John somehow banished it.
He shifted, changing the order his arms were crossed in.
You aware another hunter was supposed to arrive yesterday? He asked.
Karkak grimaced and shook his head.
That's the kind of information you're supposed to fucking share with us, he said.
Not so simple. Almost none of the other hunters know what's going on here. It's a recon black zone. Graciously allowed since I keep the town on lock with minimal presence. Easier to bring them in quietly before the council demands some kind of rite of passage, he said.
Karkak couldn't see his eyes, but he felt like he was being looked down upon. He jammed a finger up at the hunter.
Do I need to remind you that the whole alt side in this city only tolerates you because you do everything except hunt? You get to stay here because you don't get to keep shit from us.
The hunter made a snort of derision.
The shit I keep from you could fill a prison. We cooperate. Nobody's in charge. You hide your markets from me. I have the corpses of the ferals you can't keep a grip on. Now, are we going to argue about the shit your council still thinks is over your head?
Or do you want something to report? Karkat was stifled, resisting starting a whole fucking scene in this delicate situation.
Fucking talk, then,
he said through clenched teeth. Hope your memory's as sharp as your attitude, the hunter murmured.
The hunter was supposed to be in town, so I had to act fast. Or there will be about 400% more casualties than what we ended up with. I can hardly convince another hunter that our jolly little kumbaya circle here in Houston is safe with a fuck-off huge chaos magic circle on my roof.
Crockett's eye twitched. At least the logic followed.
I took everyone to a purification site. Didn't expect the body to rip its way out of the bag before burial, or to have superhuman strength which it used to break my sword. And to attempt to eat everyone there. Or to cry for her mother. After Vriska and John subdued her, so I asked the wizard, Doc L, to run some tests on Kanai and on John. Because the boy doesn't know how he banished the chthonic entity, survived being thrown through a tree, or was able to stop Kanai physically. I'm inclined to believe his contact with the entity and my wards did something. We'll have to ask Doc L what she found out. I was outside the circle until that girl brought it down.
He jabbed a thumb at Jade. Karkat blinked. The Miss Lalonde, magical researcher and notorious absentee mother who Mama Grub had been trying to contact about Rose's issues regarding magic,
was a wizard. What the fuck?
Are there any other fucking wizards, hunters, or spontaneous power acquisitions I should know about before we continue?
Cockat seethed. You should watch The Lord of the Rings if you haven't. It's got plenty of all that. Come on. Let's get a sit rep already. Elder, the hunter said, walking over to the wizard who was assembling herself something that smelled antiseptic.
Oh, Roderick. The woman put up an appreciable attempt at a polite smile, her glass halfway to her mouth.
Did you need something? Would you like to meet your brother's long-lost friend?
The hunter didn't look moved. Cockat needed to figure out how to pull that stone face. What'd you find out? What's Kanai? What's John? He said economically. The woman swigged her drink and set it down, swallowing with some effort.
Well, she manifested the stigmata, if that's something that interests you.
What, like Jesus?
Cockat scoffed.
That's generally what stigmata refers to, yes, don't ask me why. Instead of a species, I wrote down pati dolorem, passions, consecutionis. Bear the pain, suffer the consequences. Some kind of curse, if I've ever seen one. Whatever it is, it gave her a startlingly powerful bloodlust and physically transformed her to be vampire-like. The fangs look more designed for slicing and ripping, though, seems an inefficient way to remove the blood. There's something more at play within the curse, but whatever it is, it's very old. Old as balls, even. I doubt modern magic could get a proper grasp on it without some contextual knowledge of its application.
She took another swig. Damn, that's good. Why was I hiding this in the lab?
The curse, the hunter said.
Right. There's not much more to tell about it. I only got a quick glance when I shot the magic through her.
You did what?
Carcat asked.
Oh, nothing much, just a stunning spell. I'd needed to afflict her with something, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to tag along the countercurse.
Wrapped up all that voracious rage in a teeny little bubble, like a freezer bag. It's the same principle when you need to perform a counterspell on a wizard duel, you say.
What did that to her?
Carcat interrupted.
Nothing. It's the only reason she's not turning this lab into a butcher shop.
She sipped her gin and tonic. Though I might have caught something else in the bubble unintended. It felt just like a little touch of some kind of ancestral magic. I don't even know what it was doing there. But it was certainly all tangled up with the curse. The hunter grunted.
She had a family magic. Passed down from a long time ago.
Let her make magic clothes. The wizard nodded with a frown.
That would do it. Curses and blessings are much too magnetic when they're in the same person. Upside, though, she raised her glass. They're sure to cancel each other out with a little bit of time. Like an acid and a base.
So she'll turn back to a human?
Cockhead asked.
She is a human, the doctor replied. Nothing about her soul has changed, just her blood, metabolism, muscle, bones, marrow, saliva, stomach, upper intestine, lower...
Cockhead raised a hand.
So you're saying she's going to need to drink blood forever?
The doctor nodded quickly.
But she'll have the presence of mind to ask for consent.
Cockhead rubbed at his temples, groaning. The hunter coughed, which might as well have been a wail of anguish coming from him.
So we can turn her back.
With another spell, he asked, pushing his shades back up his nose. The doctor tapped her long, pink fingernail on her glass. Theoretically, the problem with transformatives is the duration they need to ferment. For a permanent full-body reversion to basic human biology without cancer? She looked to the ceiling, doing mental math. 87 years, about.
Is there anything that could speed it up?
The hunter asked.
Hold on, there's nothing fucking wrong with needing to drink blood. She's already part of the alt community. She wouldn't have a problem getting food.
Cockhead's face soured even deeper.
That's fine and dandy, Elder, but I'm looking to undo a mistake. If it comes to it, I'd like it to be Kanai's decision on how she wants to live,
the hunter said. Cockhead looked at his reflection in those stupid fucking anime sunglasses.
Whatever, as long as it's up to her, he grumbled.
Slow down, boys. The doctor spoke between them. To answer your question, Roderick, there might be something we can do about the transformation if I can reverse engineer the curse, but since it's currently being neutralized, I'd have to do so from scratch. I'll do what I can with the artifact, but it'll take time. It would be quicker if I could talk to who cast the curse, or at least who the artifact belongs to, if it originated with chaos magic. She seemed to suggest it as an impossibility.
I...
Cockhead started. Was he going to throw Feferi under the bus? No. This was Feferi's mom who did this. The Selkie herself would want to do anything to help Kanaya.
I know who it belongs to. This person will want it back, though, and they had nothing to do with the haywire fucking ritual. Got that?
Cockhead finished with a snarl.
The hunter looked at the doctor. Some kind of silent communication passed between them that Karkat didn't like, but the doctor answered.
That should be fine. We aren't looking to punish anyone. If we were, we'd be throwing Mr. Strider in the stockades.
She laughed a cruel, haughty laugh. The hunter was impassive.
And I'm sure this artifact will be safe in its owner's hands if it only started causing trouble once an inexperienced practitioner got her hands on it. Summon this owner as soon as you can. The closer we are, temporarily, to a curse being placed, the easier it is to root out.
Karkat nodded, pulling out his phone. As he opened up his contact list, he saw the recently added name of Mr. Egbert staring back at him. The hunter was already starting to walk over to the little reunion happening.
Hey, Hunter, is one of those kids a John?
Karkat asked. The hunter paused, looking to the human kids, then back to Karkat.
Yeah, you'll be letting his dad know he's alive.
Karkat nodded. Gonna be calling Ginny, too. The hunter sounded almost pitiable.
I am. You should probably get your story in order,
was all that Karkat offered. The hunter sniffed before turning away.
Oh, you got under his skin, Mr. Gray, the doctor said, smiling into her glass. That's a rare talent.
Wow, thanks. I'll put it on my mantle next to my wrestling useful information out of a drunk wizard trophy.
The doctor just laughed.
Since you're in the business of wrestling, do you mind getting your actual vampire friend off the girl? I need to check those Christ hulls.
Karkat glanced over to Vriska, who was hovering over Kanaya like a broody mother hen. She'd clearly just heard everything the doctor said.
Over my dead fucking body?
Vriska hissed, flashing her eyes threateningly.
Vriska, come on! You were listening to the whole fucking conversation. The doctor didn't hurt Kanaya,
Karkat said.
You fucking turncoat! Who are you here to help?
Vriska started shifting into a more combat-ready position.
Kanaya, you shithead! We need to figure out what's going on with her, and those gold things on her hands and feet look a little fucking pressing! If you think she's a vampire so fucking much, then doesn't turning metallic mean bad?
Karkat yelled. Vriska looked between Kanaya, still comatose, and Karkat.
I'm going to be right here making these calls, and if the doctor pulls any shit, I'll help you rip her arms off. Does that sound copa-fucking-satic?
Karkat asked. Vriska sat back down.
Fine. I don't know why the hunter was calling you elder, but don't let it get to your massive head. I'm only agreeing because you're going to help me rip her arms off.
She paused, then muttered half-heartedly.
Then me and Kanaya can both get something to drink around here.
Karkat sighed and started calling for Fairy. Kanaya. Kanaya came to horizontally. Her head was swimming in a mix of spent adrenaline, hunger pangs, and mixed emotions in one atrociously chunky cocktail. She felt a sensation on her palm, a gentle touch, almost tickling. As she blinked herself awake, she recalled what had sent her into the faint. That is, aside from the starvation, pain, and stress. She heard the quietly jubilant voices of Dave, John, Rose, and the new one she'd only just seen the source of. Jade. Kanaya had no idea what to do with the revelation. All she could think about was the scents in the room and the warm bodies secreting them. Her hunger had only grown, and the foreign instincts of the creature she had become demanded she identify a potential source. To seek out flesh, which she could rip and tear. To find the beating hearts and suck them dry. Sure enough, additional scents had mingled with the others. One the scent of wet stone. Another the acrid scent of a chemical fire. An insistent scraping sensation against Kanaya's palm pulled her attention away. And raising her head, she sees Rose's mother holding a scalpel and a cotton swab, alternating between the tools in an attempt to get some sort of sample from the burning spot of pain that runs through her hand. Those golden, glimmering welts. Raising her unoccupied right hand, she turned it over, examining both sides. There was green-tinged bruising on the edges, but in the area where the hole itself had been, the skin bubbled up into large, shiny boils, as though she was burned. At this moment, two faces crowded her vision, the one on her right sending a burst of hunger through her, the one on her left simply shocking. Vriska and Karkat, wearing mirrored expressions of concern, a prospect she would normally find hilarious.
Thank Kanaya, fuck, how what are you? The hell?
Her two brashest friends make a contest of shouting over one another, an action that sparked fond memories of ringing ears and crackling headphones back in the gripe call days. Neither seemed to notice nor acknowledge the other speaking, each refusing to pause, even to take a breath. Deciding they were bound to go on indefinitely if not interrupted, Kanaya cleared her throat in what was supposed to be a prim and ladylike sound. What came out was a growl, a throaty vocalization that took herself and those around her by surprise. The fiddling with her left palm ceased at the sound, and Kanaya gingerly withdrew her hand from the rubbery clutches of the doctor, who clacked a few steps away in a waft of gin-scented silence. She glanced up at her friends, taking in their expressions of wariness. She was ashamed at herself, at the strangeness of her body.
Whoops.
Nervous, she bit her lip, only to gasp at the sensation of her unwieldy fangs tearing right through it. The cold tang of not blood filled her mouth, the distant presence of rage inside her jerking in response to the taste. In a moment, the pain abated, the wound closing with as much ease as it opened. The prickle of alien fury remained.
I'm sorry, I don't know why I did that. Can someone help me sit up? I feel rather lightheaded, and I don't think my hands are up for pushing at the moment.
I've got you, no worries, Karkat reassured her, reaching for Kanaya in a motion that forced Vriska to lean backwards out of their space. Kanaya considered gripping him as he helped her sit up, but the agony of her hands dissuaded her. So instead, she let them rest limply as he brought his arm behind her to help gently pull her upright. His skin, normally it was hard and unyielding. But as Karkat finished helping her sit up, he brought his hands to gently cup her own, like cradling a fragile bird. And his touch was soft, as though he was a human, not a troll. She didn't feel the hunger stir at his touch, however, a small mercy, perhaps. I could have done that, Vriska muttered to him, and Karkat rolled his eyes huffily.
Like I give a fuck. I know you heal fast, but still. No reason to make your scrawny ass do any more heavy lifting, he snarked back at her.
Karkat, that is no way to talk about a lady's behind.
Kanaya couldn't help but cut in with an asinine comment. She didn't wish to be at the center of their squibbling as fondly as she reminisced about it. She really was lightheaded.
I was not!
You know that wasn't what I meant. Just as she intended, Karkat's face flushed darkly, thoroughly distracted by the insinuation. She smiled at him gently, but his eyes flickered down to her fangs. She had the impression the gentleness had been lost in translation.
Geez, you're the one being called a heavy object, and you're worried about me?
So fussy of you. Vriska's tone had a touch of forced lightness to it, trying to bring a measure of levity to the conversation. Kanaya appreciated it, and attempted to follow suit.
Well, for all I know, I really am a heavy object. Now, I haven't the slightest idea what my body is like, do I? Perhaps the doctor should weigh me, once she's done with the rest of her testing.
As if in protest for the very idea of standing on a scale, her feet throbbed in pain, twins to her hands, despite the gentleness with which Karkat was examining them. On second thought, perhaps I don't wish to stand up for a while. Are my feet as bad as my hands? She craned her neck, attempting to look past her friends leaning over her. They obligingly parted their heads and revealed the doctor was now perched over her feet like a white-clad vulture, once again sampling the wounds.
Hard to tell with that bitch of a wizard getting a rubbery mitts all over them.
Vriska scowled at the doctor, who appeared not to notice, too busy prodding a particularly large boil on the delicate arch of Kanaya's foot. She winced at the sensation.
Vriska, why don't you raid the doctor's first aid kit for some burn cream, antiseptic, and gauze? We need to bandage this stuff up, and she seems disinclined to do so.
He muttered this last part, an endearingly awful attempt to quiet his voice. It absolutely failed to work. Kanaya was watching the doctor's uncanny pink eyes lightning in a bottle, glancing up at the troll momentarily, her lips pursed.
Sure thing, nurse bridge boy,
Vriska smirked, turning around in a motion that would have been catty if her hair had not been a matted mess, that is, and sauntering away from the observation table to a cabinet, gleefully pulling out tools and plastic bottles of reagents, strewing it on the floor in a surprisingly controlled mess. Nothing was breaking or spilling, at least. Kanaya's eyes returned to the doctor. The woman stood up, pocketing her tools and sample vials. Instead of walking over to Vriska, she simply sighed, retrieving a bottle of gin from the floor and drinking deeply.
That should distract her for a minute. She kept trying to shove her wrist in your mouth, you know. Thought it would make you wake up quicker.
Karkat's words returned Kanaya's gaze to him. Instead, she studied his face. It seemed different, like like she could see the little variations of coloration in his skin in a way that she simply hadn't noticed before. There were a few different hues to his eyes, those bright garnet irises gleaming at her wet, she realized, with unshed tears.
"They told me what happened to you," he blurted out suddenly, as though unable to hold it back any longer. "All of it, the voracious rage you were feeling." He said the words as if repeating someone else's. "It's a curse. The wizard constrained it for the most part. It doesn't matter who you try to attack because of it. Everyone is okay, and none of it was your fault, all right?"
He looked at her expectantly. She furrowed her brow, thinking back at the memory of the world distorting around her during the ritual.
"A curse sounds more intentional than misdirected magic of some chaotic beast. Curses have to be aimed, do they not?"
She trailed off, unable to finish the train of thought. To say out loud her understanding of curses or how a practitioner must be the one to cast them. Karkat seemed to follow it anyway, sucking in a breath between his gritted teeth.
"The thing that attacked you wasn't a beast, but I doubt she was responsible for the curse either. She was a being of pure chaos looking for her daughter."
He lowered his voice as best as he could manage.
"For Feferi. She's going to come here to get her heirloom back. You can ask her about it. She promised to be truthful with our friends, if not the authorities."
"Karkat, I have no idea how to respond to that," she stated plainly. "I have no idea how to respond to any of this. It is getting easier to keep a cool head, presumably due to being blasted with wizard magic, but even if the rage is constrained, for the most part, I am still desperately hungry."
Karkat gave her a coy smile, a rare sight on his stony features.
"Hey, you're an alt. Family, just like Vriska and all the other vampires we take care of. You're not going to starve, and you won't have to bite anyone if you don't want to. I might have some blood on hand, even. If someone didn't suck up all the bags in a 20-mile radius,"
Karkat yelled at the very obviously eavesdropping Vriska. She'd stopped tearing the cabinet apart 2 minutes ago, and had been idling nearby, pretending to be singularly focused on unfolding and refolding the bundle of bandaging in her hands. She stuck out her tongue at Karkat's words.
"Whatever. Surely we can do better than that for our beloved friend."
Vriska approached the table, handing Karkat half the bandaging and pulling a bottle of antiseptic and a tube of burn cream from her sweatpants pocket, placing them on the table.
"I still think if she wants my blood, it's better to give her the fresh stuff anyways."
Vriska's eyes flitted to Kanaya's, and the girl winked, a sly smile showing off her own much daintier fangs.
"It would be my treat. Again with this? I leave you alone to get one more drink and come back to find you once again trying to offer your blood? We still have no idea what it could do to her, or if you'd even survive the attempt."
Kanaya was prevented from giving her answer by the return of Dr. Lalande, a martini glass in hand. The cup was already mostly empty, sans a few sad olives at the bottom. Vriska opened her mouth to reply, and Karkat shoved the antiseptic back into her hands.
"You focus on getting these wounds cleaned up, let me deal with the doctor."
Kanaya wasn't keen to watch Vriska stumble into an altercation with the already unpredictable wizard, especially as she topped off her glass from a gallon-sized cocktail shaker in front of them. She hastily shoved her hand in Vriska's direction.
"Karkat's right, I can't eat right now, not with my wounds exposed like this, please."
She widened her eyes at Vriska, trying to convey her sincerity. The girl's cheekbones seemed to color a dusky Tyrian for a moment, before she ducked her head to assess the proffered hand.
"I stand by what I said. Nobody feeds her. Not yet. In fact..."
Dr. Lalande snappily twisted her wrist back and forth, fingers a blur with some kind of gesture, and the room lit up in electric pink, the circle once again activating.
"Mr. Gray, I am relying on you to make sure of that. I understand her mother is arriving."
Kanaya did not feel her heart skip a beat. She missed the sensation immensely.
"Mama's coming here?"
She turned to look at Karkat.
"Shit, I'm sorry, I meant to say so already. Yeah, Mom is on her way. She'll want to know everything, including the fact that you've been starving her daughter and exactly why you felt the need to do so."
Karkat directed the last of that statement at Dr. Lalande, who quirked her brows, unimpressed, raising her drink to take a sip.
"Then she'll know how I saved her daughter from the dilemma between perpetual mind control or a murder frenzy."
Karkat rolled his eyes, turning back to Kanaya.
"We should tell everyone else, too, from the group chat. Some of them are still out looking for you," he said,
something akin to softness creeping into his voice. Tears welled up in Kanaya's eyes. When she dabbed at them and they came away green, she was reminded of the danger she posed.
"You should tell them
I'm safe for now. I think... She took a breath to steady herself. I think I would like to talk to my mother before we say anything else.
For the full text of this and other stories by the same authors, visit the AO3 pages of Madam Melon Meow and Sarcastic Celery. Constant Conquest by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at sangabrielvo.com. And there you can learn about other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.